Do you know the number one thing that surprises engaged couples? Take a guess. The sheer amount of decisions they have to make while planning a wedding. Indoors or outdoors? How many guests? Are kids invited? Controversial. Which cake flavor? Seriously, how do you even begin to figure out what's right for you? That's where Zola comes in. Zola has everything you need to make every wedding decision a piece of cake, from choosing your dream wedding venue and vendors to deciding how to best spend your budget. With tons of customizable wedding websites, save the dates and invites, every detail will feel like you. Zola will even help you choose the gifts, experiences, and cash funds you really want. The next thing you know, you've planned your whole wedding all in one place. From getting engaged to getting married, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show. Welcome back in. Alongside of Bernie Miklas, I'm Matt Pauly. If you're going, what's the Gas House Gang? Well, it is a sports show, mainly Cardinal show, but we get into other things. A digital show that runs at 12 noon each day on KMOX social media channels, including YouTube. So I would love for you to check that out for yourself. But we're doing more than sports because this is the Dave Glover Show. And right now, we are very happy to welcome in studio with us food critic for STL Magazine. He is George Mahey. George, great to see you. How are you?
Thanks. Happy New Year, almost.
Yeah, I think, let's see, we got to get your microphone turned on if we can do that. Are we good? Okay. All right, well, it's my headphones then. So, there you are. I just got you.
Yeah, no stranger to the Glover Show, me, so yeah. That's good. This is a familiar chair on a Friday, so I'm good. I'm comfy.
Thanks for doing this. No, I really wanted to have you on because, first of all, you and I have never done any radio together, and I'm a loyal reader, and I learn so much, and I keep up with the whole St. Louis restaurant scene because of you, and of course, Ian Frobe as well,
sure.
But others, even other people at STL Magazine. You guys do a great, great job. And I thought, you know, we're wrapping up 2024. It's been a very interesting year in St. Louis restaurants. They really, many years have been interesting in the last 10, 15 years. So I thought, you know, you could kind of put a bow on 2024 for us. And let's start off with this.
Yeah. There's so much going on at the end of the year. It's a big bow. You've got the best restaurants of the year, which we covered in this last issue. You've got the best new restaurants of the year, which everybody wants to know about. You've got the most anticipated restaurants for 2025. And, you know, you get into, you know, trends and things like that. So, yeah, this time of year, there's a lot to talk about.
I want to ask you this. One thing that intrigues me. And everyone's written a lot about him, and I'm going to mispronounce his name. It's going to be like one of your Fox 2 segments. How do you pronounce someone's last name? I love
that. That was a good bit.
I loved it. Is it Ben Palemba?
Poremba.
Poremba. Okay. Yeah. I really butchered that, but that's why I asked.
No, you're not the first. It's okay.
He is a, to use a sports term, he's like a whirling dervish.
Yeah. He's an impresario. He's a magician is what he is. He's done some things. And really, that's a good place to start because, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, he's got all these great restaurants in Botanical Heights. you know, he really made Botanical Heights. Botanical Heights, remember, it was McCree Town before he got there. And then it became Botanical Heights because there's all these great restaurants there and all these great places to live. And all of a sudden, this neighborhood gets transformed. 10 years later, he's negotiating to buy buildings and to kind of continue things. And let's just say things didn't work out. And he said, you know what? I'm out of here. And I've never seen a guy pack up three restaurants on the same day on New Year's Eve and say, I'm going to move this to the other part of town to a place called the Del Mar Maker District. And everybody goes, what is that place? You know what? And he's basically doing the same thing that he did in Botanical Heights in the Del Mar Maker District, decides he's going to take his three restaurants and open them all up in the same year. But here's the I think the most incredible thing that happened this year is not only is he doing that, is he in the process of doing that, he added three more. He doubled down, six restaurants in this Del Mar Maker District, in this little section of Del Mar that's, you know, between Union and Kings Highway. It's a half mile long.
It's not
long.
Far from where we live. I'm kind of in the neighborhood.
Well, it's I mean, I just, again,
it's amazing.
Give this guy the award for one, having the guts to do it, and then having the guts to double down and do it again. I've never seen anything like it. We'll never see anything like it again.
And Matt Pauly, let's try to absorb that. Yeah. So he had three successful restaurants, but the area, you know, he decided, well, I got to go somewhere else. Okay, it'd be better. So he moves across town, and as George explained. And then it's not just that he took his three restaurants. He likes this new district that he is largely responsible for giving life to.
Yes.
And he's like, I'm going to open three more places. I mean, six restaurants in one district owned by one guy. How old is he, roughly?
I don't know. Yeah. He's probably 50, I'm guessing.
But
he's a pretty young guy, but he's a gutsy guy. And in the three restaurants he's opened up, the three new ones, it's funny because they came down the pike before, you know, the old ones did. So a place called Esca, which is, you know, maybe the restaurant of the year, opened up. And that was, he came out of the gates blazing. He said, I want people to talk about this place before we even talk about the places that I'm bringing back.
And all different styles of cuisine, too.
All different styles.
They're all unique in their own way.
Yeah, and they're all kind of transportive. One of the things that he likes to brag about, and he's right about this, is pull this thing out of the ground and put it in any city in the country, and it works. It fits. It feels good. And he's really, and if you look at any of his places, if you were in any city in the country, you'd be darn glad to have his restaurants in these places. So he's got that talent, and a lot of guys can't do that.
You've been watching restaurants for a long time. What would you say is generally the success rate of new restaurants that maybe have a little bit of fanfare to them? It's a hard business to make it.
You know, they used to say 90% fail, and I'm not sure it's that high, but I think a lot fewer, inexperienced people are getting into it. So those that are know a little bit more. I think they're doing more of their homework because it's a humongous investment. I mean, even to do a sandwich joint is $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000, and to do a restaurant, you know, in quotes, you know, a real sit down restaurant, it's, you know, you're talking $1 million plus. So you don't want to screw that up. You don't want to make that mistake. So you want to do your homework. You want to make sure you're doing the right thing in the right neighborhood, and that's how that works. So yeah, I don't know that percentage to be honest, but one of the things that I did, and I just actually compiled this statistic. Bernie, I know you know this. I keep track of the openings and closings and coming soons, and I do this on a monthly basis.
You do.
And I log that, and it's a monster article that I do. And since I log the openings, closings, and coming soons, I can take them at the end of the year and go, let's add all this up and see how we did. You know, what kind of year was it? And 2024 was, like you said, it was an interesting year. There was a lot more closures than in 2023. Which I don't know if it surprised me or not, but it was about the same as in 2022. So we had a great year in 2023, and you know, we're kind of back to the way it was. There was, the way I've tallied it up, there was 83 closures and 186 openings. So it's basically a 2-to-1 deal. That's how it works, and it runs at least that much. It's 2 or 3-to-1. openings to closings, which is fascinating.
And I'm pretty sure I read this in St. Louis Magazine, and forgive me because I'm like that. I read so much, I have a hard time. It's like putting it into the correct slot. You know what I mean?
No, completely.
But I'm pretty sure it was somewhere in St. Louis Magazine you all were talking about. And maybe you quoted a chef talking about the St. Louis food scene in general, the resilience of it, the fact that there's been an explosion of all these new kinds of cuisines and all this new kinds of cooking and new chefs, rising star chefs, every kind of food that you can imagine. The diversity is unbelievable. And some go belly up, some last a while. Everyone has challenges. But the chefs in our town, whether they're established or whether they're up and comers, they keep just punching away at it. Like, nobody quits, nobody gives up. It's the elasticity in the restaurant movie is like amazing, the way they do come and go, but everyone's still fighting the good fight.
And they're incredibly positive. They're the most positive group. They're the most glass half full guys you'll ever want to meet. And if they do hang it up, they've got a good reason. I mean, there comes a point in time where, you know, the knees aren't as strong as they used to be. Or, you know, I hear a lot of these guys going, you know, I've got young kids and it's time. And you know, they've got legit reasons. So it's not like they don't like the business, because everybody does. But, you know, there comes a time when you know, certain guys hang it up. But, you know, and that's the other thing about St. Louis that I've learned from talking to chefs is, they love it here. Guys from out of town love it here. This is a great place to raise kids, great place to you know, to do anything. It's you know, pretty inexpensive, basically, you know, in the big picture of things. And I've found that guys that move here from out of town, it's like, boy, this is like the best deal ever. What do you guys, you know, nobody knows about this place. This is incredible. And anyway, that's, as St. Louisans, that's a great thing to be able to brag about.
It's remarkable. And this goes to the credit to the people who run these restaurants, but also people who support these restaurants, that in a city where there's a lot been made of the, and I know you're not just downtown restaurants, it's the entire St. Louis area, but in a downtown that has some challenges, in a area that the growth is not, population growth is not moving in St. Louis the way it is in moving other cities, that restaurants are being, total number of restaurants are being added, and they are able to be successful. It says a lot about kind of the whole ecosystem.
It does. And, you know, and that's one of my big things too, is, you know, we all know that we've got a big chip on our shoulder here. And a lot of people, I won't go downtown, I won't go east of Skinker, I won't do this, I won't do that. But I certainly promote the heck out of the guys that are doing things in the city, because again, that takes an extra ounce of guts to do that. There's a place called Idle Wolf. Have you been there, Bernie?
No, I haven't.
It's in the 21C Museum Hotel, which is the old YMCA. It's in that beautiful old YMCA, that 100-year-old YMCA building. And, you know, they've got there's a museum on the second floor. There's a hotel and a great restaurant called Idle Wolf. You know, that's where they've got the swimming pool in the basement. Remember the old Y?
I do, yeah.
I mean, it's this storied great building, and they've done an incredible job with it. And a lot of people just, no, it's downtown, it's midtown, I don't want to go there. And I go, just go there. I'm telling you, you will thank me later. Take an Uber down there. Do whatever you have to do, whatever you're afraid of. Just get over it, and if somebody, I'll drive you down there, you know. But experience that hotel and this restaurant, because it just, again, it's a perfect example of what cool things that are going on in this town that gets short shrift.
We're talking with George Mahey, food critic, St. Louis Magazine. We'll continue the conversation coming up in just a moment here on KMOX.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Guest House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show. My name is Matt Pauly. Bernie Miklas is here, and George Mahey, food critic, St. Louis Magazine, continues to join us in studio. And we're kind of looking back at the year that was in restaurants in 2024. George, just to kind of go back to where we're at, it's a very important story, I think, to get out there, that we are in a community where the restaurant scene is thriving.
It is thriving, and it continues to thrive. And fortunately, it continues to thrive. It keeps me busy. It's a fascinating scene to watch. And the more that we get recognized on these national publications and James Beard Award winners, and you know, our star just continues to rise and rise and rise. And now we're, you know, I think anybody in the country will admit that we're not this flyover culinary city, flyover city in general, flyover culinary city for sure. You know, we've definitely come into our own, and we've got some really, really good restaurants to show for it. Are you wondering what I have in this, Bernie? I brought something for you.
Oh, wow. What did you bring to me? Fruitcake?
It's fruitcake.
Yeah.
Are you a fruitcake guy?
Is it good fruitcake?
Well, yeah, you'll have to be the judge of that. I did this thing on fruitcake, and that's as polarizing as,
like
Provel cheese. I mean, it is just like, you know, what is this? And that's from the Trappist monks at Assumption Abbey in Ava, Missouri. That is the quintessential fruitcake in the country, and they make them down in Southwest Missouri. That's it's just a.
I'm honored. Thank you. I can't wait.
It's really good, and they take this and they soak them in rum, and these fruitcakes last 2 years. Because they're rum, because they're rum soaked, and they will apparently once you open them and put them in the refrigerator, they'll last a year. So, I made a joke that you know we get these fruitcakes, and there's all the fruitcake jokes at this time of year. But, you know, we could have this fruitcake on the 4th of July, and it would be just lovely. So anyway, I just thought I always like to bring a little snack along, and nothing like a little fruitcake at the holidays. Anyway, what were we talking about?
That's fast. Hey, RFK wants to get rid of preservatives. Let's just dump rum on everything.
Exactly.
I guess.
So before I ask George the next question, he won't mind this. I just. Need to say anchors away, okay?
And that's a reference to Navy they're not done yet, but Navy is in the process of beating Oklahoma in the Armed Forces Bowl.
Oklahoma went for two at the end. Navy stopped it, sacked the quarterback. Anchors away. The Navy blue and gold. I'll spare you the Glee Club version of Navy blue and gold. Anyway, George, I wanted to ask you this. There's so much we want to ask you. When, in your opinion, this is actually a two-part question. When did St. Louis in earnest begin that transformation into a completely different type of food city where it national acclaim, kinds of hot chefs. And who was the game changing chef that did
and
that?
I think it was interesting because I've been here all my life, and when I was a kid, you know, we're in a French city, but it wasn't really the French restaurants that became known. It was the Italian restaurants. Right. It was the Italian restaurants on the hill. And it was those places really got the national acclaim, and places like Tony's, you know, won that Mobile 5 Diamond Award for years and years and years. And people that would come to St. Louis and knew St. Louis and what do we do in St. Louis? It was Tony's forever and ever and ever, and things kind of stayed on that Italian, upper end Italian plateau for a while. But to answer your question, I think that when Gerard Kraft of Niche Restaurant won the James Beard Award for Best Chef Midwest, that's when everybody's head snapped around and said, who, what, where? And it started from there. And I think the year later or 2 years later, Kevin Nashon won the same award at Sydney Street Cafe. And at that point, everybody, I think that was the we've arrived moment.
You know,
and this was, this has been 10 or 15 years.
You know how in the NFL we talk about, you know, Joe Gibbs had a coaching tree. This guy had a coaching tree. You know, they go, some don't become good head coaches. A lot of them do or whatever. Is Gerard Kraft the guy also who had a prestigious coaching tree? Like chefs that worked under him went out on their own?
Yes, a lot of them have. But honestly, a lot of these Italian trees are this. I mean, there's a lot of spokes on those wheels, and you know, you hear about these guys, and they're all seem to be related. But yes, I think to a degree, certainly, you know, it's one of those things with Gerard's. You know, he's this incredible chef, and who wouldn't want to work for? So he automatically attracts, you know, kind of an upper echelon person to begin with, who's already kind of got it going on. So it's a little less of a leap for them to go do something else than some guy that's never done anything and takes it on. But there's been some Girard disciples that have gone on to do good things for sure. And anytime I write these articles, and it's nice to say he was a Niche alum, right. He was a Brasserie alum, he worked at these. That's just all of a sudden people go, okay. It just, you've got street cred automatically.
This is probably a dumb question, but when chefs come in from outside the market, top level chefs to open restaurants in St. Louis, is there something going on that is especially, is there a group that tries to track them? Is it just the reputation of the city? What results in people coming in from out of market?
I think it's a concerted effort. And to be honest, I don't know that we've done that good of a job doing that. They kind of hear about us, they can be a big fish in a small pond here. And that appeals to them. Right. And but to answer your question, I think that the folks at Explore St. Louis are doing a really good job. They get out and visit all these cities, and they're preaching the gospel of St. Louis big time, both as a tourist destination and a place for restaurants and a place for chefs to come. So I would give most of the credit to those guys and certainly the chefs in town too, the Girards and the Kevins. These guys go all over the country doing pop-ups and guest appearances and hang out with their buddies in Los Angeles and Chicago and New York. And all of a sudden, all their people are going, wow, what's this place? Who's this guy? And all of a sudden, all this cross-marketing happens. And that didn't happen 10 or 15 years ago. There's a lot of kind of cross-pollination that's going on across the country. So that helps.
Our final question, because we're running out of time, with George Mahey of St. Louis Magazine. All right, what are some of the restaurants you're going to miss that are closing or did close in 2024?
Yeah, there's we did 20 places. I think I just put this out there, and it's always hard to do because do you really want to talk about it? But I'll tell you, we talk about it in the same sense that Southern closed this really good fried chicken place, and boy was it good, and boy will we miss Southern. But what we decide to do is we say where to go instead. Hey, if you like Southern, go to Grace Meat and Three, because it's the guy who came up with that recipe who owns Grace Meat. So basically, you're getting the same chicken. So anyway, in this article, we've got 20 places, and yes, they're gone. But where do you go now? There's a really good burger joint. Bernie, was called Burger Champ in Maplewood. Really, really good. And they closed it. It was kind of in a strange spot. But he also had a place called Pizza Champ right down the street. And he took some of those burgers and fries and the things that were the hits at Burger Champ. So when you go to Pizza Champ, you can get a burger. And it's the same burger. So it's not all woe is us.
If you go to stlmag.com, that story is up. In fact, I have it on my screen now. And we are out of time, but let me just say this, and you had on the list, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because Rich and Terry LaRusso, dear friends of mine, Rich's passing just sort of set things in motion where Terry thought, it was time to close LaRusso's, which is a big loss, but gosh.
Wonderful people, both of them. Rich was, there was nobody like him.
But all the love that they served, the food was great, but all of the love and warmth and hospitality they served for generations. Just fantastic legacy that place has.
Yeah, and Rich was the kind of guy that would, and people tell the story, they said, he would stop what he was doing at his own family right. dinner to go cook for somebody who didn't have a family.
He was a dear friend, a close friend.
And the place, where do you go instead? We said Trattoria Marcella.
I agree with that.
Great family legacy restaurant that you get those same
warm and fuzzy vibes. I totally agree. With that. Good call. George Mahey, thank you for coming in, man.
Hey,
Happy New Year.
It's so good to see you. We've got definitely a mutual admiration society you and me, enjoy the fruitcake. What can I say?
I should eat it so I can give you the plate. I'll put it on my pad. That's what sports writers do. We take foodstuffs
and you put it on your
we just put it on our notepad.
So do I. Believe me, I've got coffee rings and smudges from fruitcake too. But yeah, that's
because I want you to have your. I'll take your trash there.
We'll get the review of that coming up here in just a little. George Mahey joining
us. It's a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Absolutely, it's the Dave Glover Show right here on KMOX.
Thank you.
Back at it here on KMOX. It is a Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show. We're doing a lot of sports, but doing some non-sports as well, thanks to George Mahey. Bernie Miklas, real quick, we're going to get Clark Judge on in just a moment, but how was the fruitcake?
Exceptional. I'm not saying that because George gave it to me. I'm a kind of a fruitcake ambivalent person. I don't hate it like a lot of people do. I don't necessarily seek it out. But what did he say? There is made by Franciscan monks. Was
something like that? Yeah, in Southwest Missouri.
In Southwest Missouri, it was outstanding.
Yeah,
and it's like I got to go get me some of that now.
You can get really Straub's for like $50 for a fruitcake. So
yeah, like
there
two and a half pounds. Yeah. There is good fruitcake. I just had some.
There you go. Right. Let's bring on right now Clark Judge, part of Talk of Fame, part of the podcast, the Eye Test for Two. He joins us right now. You can follow him on Twitter, by the way, at Clark Judge TOF. Clark, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
My pleasure. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Clark, Bernie Miklas here. Always kind of you to join me whatever I'm doing in terms of radio, and I'm happy to be back on KMOX, and thanks for being a guest on KMOX. Tell us about the Kansas City Chiefs. What did that convincing win at Pittsburgh tell you about them? Anything new about them, or did it just reaffirm what you're pretty sure you already knew?
No, I mean, it reaffirmed that they're a really good team. But I felt all year long that they're sort of like a cat with nine lives. I mean, they keep winning games they shouldn't, and they keep having these miraculous finishes that really are implausible sometimes. You know, a drop snap before a game-winning field goal, a blocked field goal, a penalty that's not called, a penalty that is called. I mean, just numbers of things. You go, some point, these guys can get beaten, right? Well, now they're putting some distance between them and their opponent. That should be scary for the rest of the league because it looks like they're actually accelerating instead of decelerating to the finish line. Now, I'll be honest with you. Like you, Bernie, I covered the league for a long time, and have watched teams dominate from beginning to end. Typically, they're worn out by the end, and so they're fading. This team doesn't look that way, and they got DeAndre Hopkins, they got Hollywood Brown back, and now you look at the Pacheco's back. It just seems like all of a sudden you're getting guys back, and are they getting healthier? It's incredible. Are they getting healthier? I mean, what it told me is that they're more than a team that's kind of living on the edge and sort of succeeding by chance and with a lot of talent, certainly, but with some luck. But now they look really good. And I looked around the AFC and I said, who can beat them? The only two teams I think could is one that has, and that's Buffalo. But the other would be Baltimore Ravens. I think that's about it.
They're in a situation now where they're not going to play a football game for about 3 weeks that actually matters. Yeah. They'll play against the Broncos on the road, and not many guys will play coming up next weekend. Then they get that first round bye. I think a lot of times you get worried when a team sits out for a while with rust, but with this group, is there maybe actually more benefit to having a few weeks off compared to other teams?
Yeah, I mean, Chris Jones gets healthy. These guys, if you know, Mahomes has a high ankle sprain. I keep laughing when I hear them describe he's got a high ankle sprain. Bernie knows you cover a guy with a high ankle sprain in a locker room. They're generally at 4 to 6 weeks. Well, if this guy's either miraculous healer or they're missing on the diagnosis, but you can't play 3 or 4 days afterwards. You can't. And yet he plays, and maybe he's just a different sort of person. But that happened last year in the playoffs as well, and I thought, boy, they're in trouble. He was fine. He moved around fine. He didn't look like a guy that had a high ankle sprain. But in any case, it gets everyone a chance to get well. I don't worry about them simply because of Andy Reid's record coming out of byes. He doesn't lose. I mean, just doesn't lose. He's like, what is it, 22-4 or something? His teams are very well prepared. No matter how much time they have off, they're fine. They've been in the last 6 conference championship games. So they know what's going on, and they know they've been down this road so many times before. I look at them as, certainly the favorite in the AFC. They can be beaten, and I felt all year long they're just waiting to be beaten. And then when Buffalo got them, I thought, okay, here it comes. All right, because look at the finish. They got Pittsburgh. That's going to be tough. Houston, that'll be tough. At Denver, they won't win that game because Denver should have beaten them the first time, blocked field goal. And then you look at they crushed the Steelers. They had no trouble with the Texans. And the Denver game doesn't mean anything. I think they would have lost that game had they started the regulars or not, because that's a tough place to win. They should have lost the first time at Kansas City. But they're just playing so well right now that you kind of look down and go, well, they've been here before. They know the drill. I don't think they lose that first game. Could they lose the championship game? Yeah, they could. But one of those two teams better be in it. And I'm talking about Baltimore or Pittsburgh.
Clark Judge is with us.
Baltimore or the Buffalo Bills. Not
right. And I'm just going to ask you about that in a minute. I just want to plug the fact, if you go to Talk of Fame 2 and spell out 2, talkoffame2.com, you'll see it. It's just a great quick stop for a lot of outstanding NFL stuff with Clark Judge and others. All right, I wanted to ask you about this because it's hard to like get into playoff matchups and who's going to play who. We don't know yet. But of the Bills, between the Bills and the Ravens, who do you think is the most dangerous team relative to the Chiefs not making it to the Super Bowl?
Right now, Bernie, I'd say Baltimore. Baltimore's surging. And the hole in Baltimore was the secondary early, right? You knew you could put a lot of points on him. The only question was, could Lamar Jackson outscore his own defense? And they struggled. I mean, they lost five games. But you look at that season opener, they could have tied the Chiefs. They came within, what, an inch or something of Isaiah Likely's toe being out of bounds from tying the game, or maybe winning if they'd gone for 2 points. But they can play with them. The problem you got with them is Lamar Jackson's record in the playoffs. Not good. No. I mean, 1-4, and that game last year, I was astonished. It's in Baltimore. They've got the home field. They've got the quarterback and the running game to beat them. And what happens? They want to turn Lamar Jackson into Burt Jones or into Unitas. I mean, they wanted to stay in the pocket and throw. And he went, no, these guys are vulnerable to the run, not to the pass. And they blew a golden opportunity and really – fell all over themselves and lost that game. And I thought they really lost it rather than Kansas City winning it. But then you start wondering, well, wait a second, if he's 1-4, is this a pattern? And I think he's got to get that off his shoulders. I'm talking about Jackson. So I think they're more dangerous only because they seem to be surging now the last three games. I think they've given up 30 points. And that was a really impressive win, this week. And now you look at what's left, and what's left is Baltimore should win that division, I would think, unless they, kick it to the curb on next weekend. But Baltimore then will be home, and they're really good at home, and they play well in the playoffs, typically until they get to, either deep in the game or deep in the playoffs or Kansas City. But with Lamar Jackson, that hasn't really been the case. They had a game against Tennessee, I remember, when I think they were the best team. They seemed to be the best team in the AFC, and Tennessee beat them because they had Derrick Henry. Well, now they got Derrick Henry. You've got all the weapons you need, and if the defense is playing that well, that to me is the X factor. You've got to find a defense that can give Mahomes trouble, and Baltimore might. Buffalo's beaten them, and what you know about Josh Allen is he can beat these guys, right? He's 4-0, I think, or 4-1 in the regular season. He hasn't beaten them in the postseason, though. So that's the problem you got with them. And their defense is starting to hemorrhage a lot of yards and points. I worry about them. Josh Allen can only take this team so far. I do think he's Superman in this league. I think he should be the MVP because he's trying to carry this team again, and he's doing a great job. But Baltimore's got a lot of weapons. Plus, Derrick Henry, to me, is the X factor. They've got a guy who can move the pile, and Buffalo really doesn't, unless it's Josh Allen.
Clark, I can be a prisoner of the moment, but I look at this playoff field, the teams you just mentioned, Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore, on the NFC side, Detroit, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Green Bay, maybe you put Washington and LA as like under the umbrella of really, really good teams. Do you feel like this is an abnormal year with the number of really good teams that we're going to see in the tournament?
Yeah, I do. I think it's wide open. And it's funny because a month ago, if you'd asked me, it's not wide open. It's Philadelphia and Detroit. And then Detroit started hemorrhaging players that they lost 21 guys were on IR, and they've lost many defensive stars. And you wonder how much longer they can survive. I love the attitude of Dan Campbell. Basically, listen, no one's feeling sorry for us. Let's go out there and we're going to beat them no matter who we have. And so far they're doing that. Philadelphia surging until we saw what happened when Jalen Hurts had to go to the sidelines. Nevertheless, they should have won that game last week. If Devontae Smith makes that catch, a routine catch over the middle, game's over. Philadelphia's good, again, because they've got their bases covered. They can beat you with the pass, not as much as they can with a run, but that's not only Hurts running, it's Saquon Barkley. And he's so good, he's threatening that single-season rushing record of Eric Dickerson. They play good defense. They play solid defense. Not great, but solid defense. I mean, every team's got a hole. And you look at those teams and go, okay, one of those two teams. I would give you a third one, and I'd say Green Bay is the team I would be most concerned about. Green Bay is really good defensively. Jordan Love is good enough to beat you. They're running really well. They've got weapons on the outside. I like what's going on with that team. Everyone's, you know, talking about those three, and then under the radar, the Minnesota Vikings. They just happen to be tied with Detroit, that division. And you just don't know what to make of them, I guess, because of Sam Darnold. You go, if you're a reject with the Jets, right, you can't be any good. They had a great year. It really is having a great year. I want to see them this weekend because I think they've got Green Bay this weekend, right? I want to see that game because that'll give you a real litmus test. That's going to play a playoff game. You want to see what's going to happen there. But you're right. It's wide open. The Rams are coming on. They've won 8 of the last 10. They're playing well, but they're defensively they're suspect. Stafford's Super Bowl winning quarterback. You got weapons on the outside. Williams, great running back. I worry about their defense. And so I guess if it comes down to what you're talking about, you're right. There are all sorts of possibilities here. Someone's going to pull an upset. But I look at probably, I'd say, Detroit and Philadelphia and Green Bay as the three with Minnesota on the outside. If any one of those four won, wouldn't be surprised. If there's someone from the outside, like the Rams, for instance, the Commanders, yeah, I would be surprised. I don't think that's going to happen. But those top four, I think, are one of those four is going to come out of it.
We have one more question for our good friend, Clark Judge of TalkOfFame2.com. Clark, one more weekend to go. How do you handicap the MVP race?
It's interesting, Bernie. I thought it was Josh Allen's a week ago. I think it's still Josh Allen's, but Lamar Jackson's really breathing down his neck. I feel for Barkley and Henry because I think either one of those two guys could be or should be the MVP. And, you know, what do you do with Barkley if he, for instance, breaks Dickerson's record, right? What do you do with him? Because the last guy to come close was in 2012. That was Adrian Peterson. I think the Vikings that year were 8-8 and gotten as a wild card. But he was the MVP. It's just too often we give it to the most productive player, the best all-around offensive player. That's a completely different category. Most valuable, if you're going valuable, to me it's Josh Allen because you look around that Bills team and there really aren't the stars that there are. There's not Derrick Henry, for instance. There's not a Saquon Barkley there. You're looking for a productive player, and that CeeDee Lamb doesn't really have that, and he's trying to carry them on his back with a team that isn't playing so well defensively. I look at him. I would say Barkley's completely changed the identity of those Eagles. But another guy who's not going to get much play, in fact, no play, Joe Burrow. I mean, Joe Burrow's carrying the Bengals, but he won't get there because they're not going to make the playoffs. Joe Burrow's having a great year. But to me, the way I handicap would be Allen 1, Lamar in a photo finish 2nd, and Barkley 3 and Henry 4.
He is Clark Judge. Again, the website is talkoffame2.com, spell out 2, T-W-O, talkoffame2.com. Follow him on Twitter at Clark Judge, T-O-F. Clark, thanks for taking the time. Good to, I know you know Bernie well, but for me, good to get to know you a little bit.
Yeah, always Thank a pleasure. You, Clark. Thanks very much. See
awesome.
You, Bernie.
Outstanding.
Very good. Clark Judge joining us on the program. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Wrap up hour number, what are we, hour number two of the program. Moving so fast, I don't know what time it is. More in a moment on KMOX. Starting to wrap up the second hour of the program alongside of Bernie Miklas. I'm Matt Pauly, a Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show. We're doing a lot of sports. We're doing a little non-sports as well. Bernie, you mentioned this earlier, but before we get out of here for the hour, certainly wanted to talk through what we saw today in the Armed Forces Bowl where Navy defeats Oklahoma. And we both have an affinity for service academies and service academy football. You've got your connection to Navy. I worked at Air Force for many, many years covering those athletics and being part of the broadcast team there. It is Navy should never beat Oklahoma, but they did today, and they finished a 10-3 season. And I don't know if the average – like this, we're talking sports here, but this isn't a sports story. I don't know if the average person out there realizes what these cadet athletes go through and how tough it is for them to go out and have the kind of season like Navy just had.
They're listen, they've had a great program, really. You know, it's all relative for a while. You know, you go back to, I'm trying to think of his name now. I'm forgetting the name of the coach. Paul. Paul Johnson. Sorry.
Oh, the Georgia. Georgia Tech.
Paul Johnson. Since he put together some great teams, he picked the program up from the ditch, and you know, he ended a long losing streak to Notre Dame. Beat Notre Dame a few times. You know, they had a bunch of great seasons. Then my friend Ken Niumatalolo took over, did some extraordinary things, and then you know he sort of ran out of gas, and they had a lull period there for a while. But now they're back on track. They're really, really good. And Army was down and out for a long time, but they've been great under Jeff Munkin. And your Air Force Academy, they've had phases of being really good. Then they disappear for a while. But this was kind of a rebuilding year out there this year. But Air Force has actually been really good as well. And I don't know how to frame it, because as a lifelong Navy fan, it's hard to explain. I'm not interested in charity, if that makes sense, because, yeah, there's a lot of disadvantages just on the football field. There's a lot of disadvantages. You know, you're recruiting a different type of athlete. The standards are much higher academically. The class load, the demands academically are much more than what normal students have to deal with. There is no NIL. You can't welcome in transfers. You know, you're at a lot of competitive disadvantages, but yet when today they play Oklahoma, and I know Oklahoma was missing some players, but hey, it's the bowl season. That's everywhere. They go into this game, and I expect them to beat Oklahoma. It's not like, oh my gosh, miracle on ice type of thing, you know? And I think that's the best thing about, I'm going to leave Air Force out of it for this year.
Mm-hmm.
But the great thing about Army and Navy this year is their success is really legitimate. They're really, really good.
Really good.
And so I'm proud of all Service Academy football programs.
There was a year when I was at Air Force that the Academy really wanted the media to understand what some of these kids go through. So it's not basic training as basically their entrance period. I forget what the term that they use, but the few week long period before you officially become a cadet and are enrolled. And on the final day of it, for lack of a better term, I'll call it an obstacle course, but that does not give any credence to what it actually is. And they invited the media to come out and watch this final day obstacle course. Bernie, I would have died. Like what they went through, what these 18-year-olds went through just to, as basically the graduation of whatever you call that period, I couldn't believe what I was watching and what they were going through. And it says a lot about the service academies and the military in our country and everything. But it's just, I watch something that human beings were doing, and I'm going, how do human beings do this? Like, it was just uncomprehendable.
And Troy Calhoun, like I was looking at him as you were speaking, you know, the Air Force, and 18 years there now.
He's had multiple NFL opportunities. He was offensive coordinator with the Texans at one point, and
603 winning percentage at a service academy over 18 years. Won 10 games or more 4 times, 9 or more 3 other times. I mean, outstanding. So it's been one of the more pleasurable things of my life as a sporting fan to root for Navy football. I root for the other teams except when they're playing Navy.
When I was broadcasting Air Force basketball, we'd fly everywhere on military air. So I'm on C-170s and C-130s and KC-135s. And that's sometimes I don't think you realize in a moment what you're experiencing. Every single time I got on one of those planes, I thought to myself, someday I'm not going to be doing this, and I'm probably never going to step foot on a plane like this again. It was so cool. So cool.
Great experience.
Yeah, just absolutely.
Yeah, I remember as a young, starving sports writer in Baltimore covering Navy football, their weekly press conferences down in this Admiral's Club, they just bring out trays and trays of like these big, huge ribeyes every week, you know. And I made a joke, you know. I said, oh, so this is where our taxpayers' money is going, right? You know, and I'm saying, thank you, taxpayers. You know, thank it's you. Great. Anyway, those service academies are also first class, everything
100%,
they do.
100%. Cool. That's Bernie Miklas. I'm Matt Pauly. We're in for the DGS here on KMOX.